Welcome to the Journey 8, an outreach ministry of Life's Journey, United Church of Christ, in Burlington, North Carolina. I'm your host, Reverend Judy Hudson, and I ask you to sit back and make yourself comfortable as we bring you some music and discussion about important topics of the day.
Let it go, my love, my truest. Let it sail on silver wings. Life's a twinkling, that's for certain, but it's such a fine thing. There's a gathering of spirits, there's a festival of friends, and we'll take up where we left off. We all meet again.
All right, and good evening. I'm Reverend Judy Hosner. And this is the Journey 8, and we are trying to get ourselves together here. The weather must be affecting my brain. That's what it is. So we have a packed show tonight. I'm not even sure we're going to be able to get to everything, but we're going to try. One of the things I want to tell you up front is that we are in the middle of some really turbulent weather. Coming up the coast, almost looks like a hurricane coming at me, and we're going to do our best to stay on as long as we can, but I will tell you, if the alarm goes off on my dashboard, I will be saying good evening. And those of you that are regular listeners, you know that that's the protocol, and we'll play it by ear. Okay, so let me do a couple things here while I'm talking to you. Good morning, good evening. I hope that the last week and a half, 2 weeks, have been good for you. They've been surprising and good for me. I am announcing, and who knows, I might actually get $1 million from some unknown relative. I am announcing that I'm getting married on July 16th. And but I will be around, of course, for the show that follows right after that. So yes, I'm all excited and scared, like most people, right? We have two parts to the show this evening. The first part is the beginning of the interview I did with Kara Johnstead, and this was a recorded interview, and it was done via Skype, and hopefully we, you know, will make some sense out of it, and who knows, maybe I'll find myself in a different job, right? So we're going to hit that pretty soon. And then we're going to, in the second half of the show, we're going to have Wasif, our friend Wasif, and Jen, and a gentleman by the name of Rabbi Corin. And they're going to talk about the prophet Abraham. So that should be interesting to see three different views of what's going on and how each religion, Islam and Christianity and Judaism, look at the prophet Abraham. And let's see, I'm trying to send some things over the... You know, this is really cool. I love when I have to shoot from the hip. You know, it just shows me that no matter what, God's on my side, and I'm not going to panic. Even though I hit wrong buttons, even though I spend hours pulling a script together that falls apart in the first 32 seconds of the show... But you know, it's okay, right? Because we're covered by grace. All right, so for those of you out there who are listening via your computer, you can also listen to us by calling in to listen. That phone number is 716-748-0140. And if by chance one of you get brave enough to want to talk to me, that number is 800-627-6008. Not that any of you would, because you haven't so far in 3 years. I got to encourage you. I'll find something. All right. So, again, I'm getting alerts that the weather is moving in faster. And we're going to get some of this show going anyway. So, I'm waiting for the engineer to tell me that the transfer was complete of the files that I want to do. Now, towards the middle of the show, just to give you a little heads up, there's a young lady last week who sent me an email via through the radio station, and she wanted us to play her song. She's a gospel singer. It's her first recorded song, and I listened to it and was amazed by it. And so somewhere in the middle part of the show, we're going to slide her song in. It's called Jesus Lay Your Hands on Me. And the young lady's name is Ashley. And Wright is her last name. And we're going to give it a try. So let's see. Let's go 360. I think we can. While we're waiting for these files, instead of having Wasif and Rabbi Koren on the second half, we may be brave and have them on the first half. But we have some, you know, technical rearranging to do. So y'all hang in there with me, and we're going to try and do it. Jen, are you out there yet? She is not. She's preparing for the great debate. Okay, so, all right. So we're going to get a hold of Wasif and Rabbi Koren, and we're going to try and do this in a reverse order, since the files for the interview are still being downloaded. So, as I mentioned, it's been a crazy kind of... Who's there?
Judy, this is Wasif.
Yes. Hi, Wasif, how are you?
I am very slightly surprised to get a call a little early. I was hoping...
Well, if you've been listening, have you been listening to the show? We have some technical problems.
Oh, what's going on?
The files for the interview, for what was supposed to be the first half of the show, are still being downloaded. And so instead of sitting here, I just thought we would reverse order, if you guys don't mind.
Do you have Andy on already?
I don't know. I think the engineer is dialing him.
Okay. So all right. I'm just going to give it a pause, because also today is the first day of the Muslim fasting season. And okay. That means no food or drink from about 5 o'clock this morning to about 8:40 this evening. And so I was busy prepping that and holding my phone to rush up to the room so I could talk at 8:30. So just give me a few minutes and I'm going to reorganize and come right back online.
Okay. All right.
If that's okay.
So in the meantime...
Peace to all the listeners out there. And quickly, today is the first day of Ramadan for the Muslims. So about 1.7 billion people, well, take out, you know, a million odd children, then you have at least 1.5 billion people fasted today from sundown, sun up to sundown. no food or water. So we are each in our own way trying to remember God through restraining ourselves from pursuing pleasures. So, all right, I'll be right back. Thanks, Judy.
Okay. All right, so our last link is Jen, and I'm trying to get her to call in right now. And we'll have the three Musketeers online. And we're in the process of getting Rabbi Gorin online. So this goes to show you that no matter how you write a script and you have the program, if you're flexible and you let God take over, it'll all work out. You know, no sweat, right? No panic, no sense in all that. Now, I do want to... Okay, Rabbi Gorin, are you there?
Yep, Gorin.
Gorin, okay, thank you. And Wasif is on his way back. Okay, he is here. The only person we're waiting for is for Jen. I text her, so she should be coming online. And it's, I'm sorry we had to reverse order things, but we had some technical problems. And you always have to be prepared for that on radio. So how are you, Rabbi?
Doing well. I just came from a graduation service for a Jewish middle school.
Oh, great. Middle school. You know, that's such a wonderful age. They're not really, you know, in the, you know, solid teenage years, and they're not babies anymore. And
right.
They have an interesting look on life. We have quite a few in church, and I just enjoy them thoroughly. In fact, pretty soon some of them are going to be on the radio show. So good. You've been through the graduation service. Now we're going to put you through a couple other things, and I may take Jen's place if she doesn't call in here shortly.
Good. I think Wasif knows better than I do. This program is broadcast, tell me, like, all around the world, or
yes. How we do this is, I'm located, of course, in Gibsonville, and I Skype into the radio station, the actual broadcasting station, which is in California,
right.
And it is broadcast all over the world, and it is also turned into a podcast. You can usually access it through iTunes or, you know, some of the podcasting. And then the other thing is, every show we do for the whole 3 years we've been online now is archived. So it gets recorded by the studio, and within about 48 hours, you can go to the page at BBS Radio and find where the archives are and pull it up, and you can download the show or listen to it again. So there you go. And it's neat, because I have people that write me, send me email, we probably get about 100 of them a week, send me emails for shows that happened a year ago. The problem is I have to go back and listen to the show, because I don't remember what I said.
Right.
That's way too long. You know, give me a month or two, maybe, but a year ago, no. So... So it's very interesting. We've had just a wonderful time. BBS Radio is just a wonderful group of people. They're so patient with me, because I came into this with no experience at all.
Right.
I was this, you know, rogue reverend that just wanted to spread the word. And so it's fun. We do a lot of non-traditional. We don't thump Bibles, and we don't, we try not to tell anybody where they might be going in their next life, because
right.
I don't know that. And we have a lot of music. We bring in a lot of new people that are like the young lady that we're going to hear tonight, a brand new young lady who does not have a recording contract yet. And we throw them on the air and let them have their chance to have someone hear them.
Also, if I may, Judy, Andy, this is Wasif.
Wasif, you don't need to. I could pick your voice out of a million.
Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to say a greeting of peace to everybody today. Okay. I think this is a very great occasion, and thanks to Judy and the show and their focus of the show, as when I joined in with Judy in January, was towards solidarity and understanding and acceptance. And so today, I think it's a great occasion, just because we have a Muslim person who's myself. You have a Reverend in Judy, and you have Rabbi Andy Koren from Temple Emmanuel. And I'm going to, once we get into the format of what we actually want to do tonight, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, Andy. But I just wanted to say that this is a, I only envisioned something like this could happen, but now that it's happening and to be a part of it, especially during, you know, as Muslims, as I said a little bit earlier, we're going through our first day of Ramadan. It's just a very, it's uplifting my spirit. I can't even think, I can't even think about food or water right now. Honestly, I'm actually more excited that we three are online and about to have a conversation.
Amen.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and go forward, and I'll step in for Jen. If she shows up online, then she can always take over. So as Wasif said, Rabbi, if you'd like to give us a short little idea of who you are. Everybody knows who Wasif and I are.
Sure. My name is Andy Koren. And I've been a rabbi now for 23 years. I was ordained by the Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, which is the central campus of the Reform Movement of Judaism. And I'm originally from South Florida, from North Miami, Florida. I grew up there. I'm a graduate of North Miami Beach Senior High School. That was a long, long time ago. It seems like a different lifetime. I went to Tufts University as an undergraduate. Prior to attending college, I spent a semester in Israel on the Alexander Muss High School in Israel program. And while I was a college student, I spent another semester in Israel at Tel Aviv University, making my decision in my senior year of college that I wanted to go on to study, become a rabbi. Throughout my career, for the first 10 years, I primarily served college students as a campus minister, working in the Hillel movement on campuses, and doing so both at the University of North Carolina as well as at the University of Florida. I was at Florida from 1998 to 2003. Along the way, obviously, September 11th took place. And it was at that time, I think on September 11th itself, that I created a very strong connection with the local Islamic Center in Gainesville, Florida. A very dear friend of mine at the time had been, well, actually we became friends on September the 11th and began working in dialogue from that point forward. I should say that I've been at Temple Emmanuel in Greensboro, North Carolina for the past 13 years. I was just named the associate rabbi, having served as assistant rabbi and religious school director of religious education for my first 13 years here. I'm married. My wife, Mickey, and I live here in Greensboro, and our two children are now into their early stages of adulthood. Both of them have just begun college. So that's a little bit of background. The other thing I should say is that while as a rabbinic student, while many of my friends, you know, they have many classes that you can take, obviously, in Judaism, but there are also classes that you can take where you're looking at Christianity. You know, and again, I'm not ignorant on the subject, but my main area of focus was relations between Judaism and Islam, including studying Arabic, at least classical Arabic. My spoken Arabic is terrible, and over many years, my classical Arabic has started to dissipate. But at the time, studying with a rabbi who grew up in Turkey, we wound up reading segments of the Quran in the Arabic original, as well as in Hebrew translation, and obviously in English translation, and really worked as best as I could during those years in order to look at commonalities as well as the importance of interaction between Judaism and Islam.
Wow. I know when I was in seminary, it was just beginning to be popular to study other religions. And actually, I think now the seminary I went to has a undergraduate degree in cross-cultural, I guess we could call it, studies. And of course, Islam and Judaism are the top two. So it's good that we know about each other, because with information or with education, ignorance falls along the wayside. And so let's start. And I think, what do you think, Wasif? We should have the rabbi start with his view of who Abraham is.
Let me give a little bit of background as to why we chose what we chose today, and then, yes, certainly we can have our guest go first for the protocol of proper treatment of guests. And
Torture. It could be called torture. The proper torture of guests instead of treatment. With this show, you never know what's going to happen. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Wasif. Hello.
Yeah, I am so sorry. My kids are about to leave, so my daughter wanted me to buckle her in the car, and I can't. I was trying to explain to her I'm on the radio. We chose this topic today is along the same lines as what the rabbi and the reverend just said, that it is a cross-cultural study, and we are trying to find some overlap. And the category we chose today, or the topic we chose today, was actually of the prophet Abraham, peace be upon him, who is a very well-known character in both Judaism, Christianity, and I'm guessing this is going to be a surprise for some people, but also Islam. And matter of fact, from my studies, and we'll validate this today through our discussion, is that the religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are called the Abrahamic religions because of the lineage of the prophet Abraham and his sons, and more importantly, the promise that God made to the prophet Abraham is that your seed will be like the stars, or he'll multiply the seed like the stars. And so the spread of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam is a testament and a testimony to that promise that God made to the prophet Abraham, whereas you have about 1.7 billion Muslims on this planet, I believe 2.1 billion Christians, and maybe it's a little bit more. And Andy can give us the numbers on the total number of Jews, but regardless of the numbers, I think that we people of faith look to this patriarch as one of our great leaders. And so we just wanted to discuss from each tradition the stories or the evidence of the prophet Abraham, and then see where the overlap is. So with that said, I'm going to pass the mic on to Rabbi Koren, and let him elucidate on Abraham and how he's known in the Jewish tradition.
Sure, and what I'll do is I really don't want to be too much in the lecture mode right now, and so I really just want to touch upon, you know, take an opening crack at this, because on the one hand, you know, you mentioned the prophet Abraham, and then you also mentioned patriarch, and in the Jewish tradition, we tend to look at Abraham in that sense of, you know, the patriarch, or at least he and Sarah, because to mention Abraham with also, you know, without mentioning Sarah, you know, I guess would, you know, is not telling the entire story, because for most of the time that you're getting the narrative of Abraham, you're also getting the narrative of Sarah parallel to it. You know, in kind of the spirit of Abraham and Sarah themselves, I think it's important to mention that too. In Hebrew, we call Abraham Avraham Avinu, which means Abraham our patriarch, if you will, Sarah Imenu. We know she is our matriarch. And in fact, when we meet them in the story, that's not even their names, right? His name is Abram, in Hebrew, Avram, and her name is Sarai. That's probably, you know, that's true to the way it's pronounced in Hebrew also, Sarai. And it's only through the course of the narrative that their names change. In fact, they truly are change agents. You know, very often when people think about religion, they think about things being the same, right? It's the same now, or we want to try to be the same as we were 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. In the case of the Jewish tradition, close to 4,000 years ago, if you go back to the time of Abraham and Sarah. And the fact of the matter is that these two people really are revolutionaries. If you think about where they grew up, and what the general milieu was and what they were surrounded by, they lived in a polytheistic society. That's where their origins were. And yet, called by the one God, they're going to be the revolutionaries who bring about the origins of monotheism, at least according to our story. That was a radically different concept. Right? Because before that, you know, if your tree, you know, I'm sorry, not your tree, but if your fields were prosperous, then you thanked the God of the field. And if the sun came up, right, then you thanked the God of the sun. And if, if it rained at the right time, you thanked the rain God. And, you know, the mapping was that for every blessing, there was a different God. And their revolution was to say, no, there is one source of all blessings. And in order to pull that off, they had to get out of the place that they were. And so when we were introduced to Abraham and Sarah, or Avram and Sarai, we're introduced to them before Genesis 12. But the beginning of Genesis 12 says to us that God calls out to him and says, Abraham, you have to leave. You have to go from your land, from where you were born, to the place that I will show you. And the word that's used in Hebrew there, you know, I guess if you read it in any translation, it probably says, Abraham, you should go, or go forth. It'll use two words. In Hebrew, the word is more than just go. The words, and I'll say them here for the listeners to and for all of us in our conversation, are lech lecha. Lech lecha. Now, in Hebrew, if you want to say go or go forth, you only have to just say the word lech. That means go. So what's this lecha part, right? What's this lecha part? It's like, which in Hebrew means to yourself or for yourself or for your benefit. In other words, Abraham and Sarah, you are going to have to leave for your own benefit. You're going to have to leave for your own good. Or another way that we can say it is you're going to have to go to a place where you can be your true selves. Because if you stay here, if you don't pull off something that's revolutionary, if you stay here, it's going to fizzle. And Wasif, just to add to what you said, the blessing that God gives to Abraham and Sarah is really threefold. He says, look, if you follow, right, number one, you're going to have descendants. And I love the way that you say this, because half of humanity is either Christian or Muslim.
Yep.
Right? You the numbers you gave, 1.7 billion Muslims, 2.1 billion Christians, you know, Protestants and Catholics, you know, that's half of humanity. Judaism pales in comparison, right? We're about 14 million, maybe 15 million, and that's on a good day with the wind at our back. You know, we are really, really small relative to humanity, right? We're a fraction.
I like to always say that, you know, you can, even if you talk, we can talk numbers, but let's also, you know,
no, small but mighty. I'll go with that, right?
Yeah,
but let's remember also.
Let's honestly talk about the influence of Judaism.
But other two blessings, there was a blessing for descendants. There was also a blessing for land. In other words, if you go to this place, that will be your home, right? And the place that's chosen is not just some random place, but the place is the land of Israel. And the last blessing is that God will give guidance. Of course, you know, we can see that in the various scriptures, right? Judaism with the Tanakh, with the Hebrew Bible, Christianity, obviously, with the Christian scriptures, and with Islam, Quran, right? So all of these three blessings, blessing of descendants, wow, the blessings of land, and the blessing of guidance are the threefold thing, obviously, in Judaism. You know, we see that equation, even, you know, small but mighty. the land of Israel, as well as the as Torah. In fact, you mentioned that this is the month in which, you know, the holy month of Ramadan, with God's blessing, is starting tonight, you know, even as we speak. This is also 6 days from now on the Hebrew calendar, and this is amazing how this connects. 6 days from now on the Hebrew calendar is the day in which we mark God giving the Torah to Moses at Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments and the Torah. Right?
And so, this is the amazing part, that we actually, on the Friday sermon, we were discussing how all of the holy books were actually given during this period of time. And just like the Jewish calendar, the Muslim calendar is based on a lunar month. And so it's a moving target every year.
Right. We calibrate every year, but you guys, yours is kind of a moving target. But that's just an interesting coincidence for us right now. But be that as it may, my opening statement is Abraham as revolutionary, but called, right, to move. You know, the word that's used that we translate into English is Hebrew, right? Abraham is called an Ivri, right? And the word in Hebrew, it's probably very similar in Arabic, Avar or Abar or something like that, right? Means to move, to cross over, to cross boundaries, to go beyond, right? Abraham and Sarah really needed to go beyond, but to do so for their own benefit and for the benefit of their descendants, and obviously the way that we talk, for the benefit of humanity. So, because if not, right, then what do you run the risk of? You run the risk of just living as a lifeless bleh, right? If Abraham stays where he was, bleh. You know, and that happens a lot in life, where people get kind of caught in a rut, and it's like, he's got to move. And Sarah have to move in order to make these changes. And look, we're still talking about it 4,000 years later, right? We're still naming our children after these people. That's how important.
Can I ask a quick question, Rabbi Koren? I found out through my research that the patriarch and the prophet Abraham there, and Sarah, along with others, are buried in Hebron. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so that's correct.
Abraham, it'll say in Genesis. I want to get this right. I believe it's Genesis chapter 23. Sarah dies, and Abraham goes and he negotiates with the locals. And actually, for the first time, as recorded in Torah, you know, he purchases a parcel of land, and that's specifically for where he is going to bury Sarah. He will let her be buried there. It's called the Cave of Machpelah, and even till this day, that place is marked. At another time, on another radio program, we can talk about that, because it's a very contentious place, you know, in modern geopolitics, but that's for another conversation. But they, yes, you're right. Their burial place is right there in the city of Hebron.
All right. Okay. So I'm going to cut in. I'm going to cut in and play referee here, because we're running so late. Due to the technical problems we had in the beginning, and I don't know if Jen got on the line yet or not. We're still trying to patch her in. And the weather is moving in rapidly. I probably only have about 10 more minutes before the thunder starts and I have to shut the equipment down here in my studio. So I would like to, if it's okay, move to Wasif for a brief explanation of how Islam looks at Abraham. Now, it's interesting, the description that you gave, Rabbi, it goes pretty close to the Christian, you know, there's a few little twists and turns, but I'm amazed. Not amazed. Yes, I am. So, Wasif,
I'll start by saying that the place of burial, Hebron, I believe Hebron is translated to alliance or community, and even as friend, and the prophet Abraham or Ibrahim in the traditions of Islam is known as the friend of God, Khalilullah, which means that God befriended him, and you can actually find evidence of this in the Bible itself. As the rabbi mentioned, in the Jewish tradition, the focus of Abraham is through Sarah, And the in the Muslim tradition, the focus of Abraham in the Quran is through his other wife, Hagar, who he had Ishmael with. So Ishmael was the offspring of Hagar and Abraham. And the once they had the child, this was a, he was the first child through for Abraham, and then of course Isaac was through Sarah. And but when Hagar and Abraham had their first child, God commanded Abraham, and he listened, and certainly was very elucidating for me to hear the rabbi talk about, you know, moving and to go, and God asked Abraham to go. Well, this is a very interesting story, because where God asked him to go was to actually take Hagar and Ishmael towards the middle of the desert and leave them there. And this also, you know, tells you about the faith of the prophet Abraham, because really, honestly, if you take yourself and put yourself in a position of leaving your wife or handmaid, bondmaid in the desert with your first son, you know, I have tried to put myself in that position, and honestly, I cannot come to grips with mm-hmm. what emotional turmoil or what I would have to go through in part with my faith to actually do that. And you would be surprised to know that once Abraham did follow the order of commandment of God and left Hagar and Ishmael, and as he's walking away, she comes to him and says, Ibrahim, why are you leaving us here? We don't have any water or any food. And the story says that he's quiet. He's quietly walking, although she can see the emotions are filling him up. But later he describes that the reason he didn't say anything is because he didn't want a conversation to start, which would actually weaken him mm-hmm. from the commandment that he was supposed to follow. We understand Abraham to be a very understanding and sympathetic and compassionate individual in Islam. And so two times she asks him, why are you leaving us here, and no answer. And then finally she says, you can just say yes or no to this. She said, did God tell you to do this? And he said, mm-hmm. yes. And then she finally said, okay, if God commanded you, then we will aid you in this. And so she is left there with Ishmael. And of course, the search for water ensues. If you've been in the desert or in the Middle East area, water mm-hmm. is a very prized commodity. As you can understand, it's a desert. And she starts to run between two hills called Safa and Marwa looking for this water. Eventually, in the story, I'm cutting it short because of the weather, the heel of the prophet Ishmael hits the floor, and through God's intervention and his command, a spring comes out under the etching that he has made through his heel. That spring to this day actually is called Zamzam. And the reason it's called Zamzam is so much water started to come out that Hagar started, she got worried and nervous, and she says, like, stop, stop, stop. And to this, Zamzam means stop, stop. And to this day, the well of Zamzam is still in Saudi Arabia, Mecca, where it feeds 2.5 million people just in a two-week span in Hajj. They tried to drain it back in 2001, but they were surprised that it filled up actually 10 times faster than they could drain it. And so to this day, it gives water in that area, and this is why Mecca is where it is. Matter of fact, the fifth pillar of Islam, which is the pilgrimage of Hajj, where you have about 2.5 million people go to Saudi Arabia and perform this pilgrimage. The patron of the Hajj actually says it's like the Super Bowl, but everybody wants to play in it.
Yes.
And so the rites of that pilgrimage, the rites of the Hajj, are basically, you know, one of the actions that you do is actually go between the two hills like Hagar did seven mm-hmm. times looking for water. The prophet, and as you can see, the end of polytheism in that area was led by many, but I think it, as Rabbi Andy Koren said, and as it is understood in Islam, it was started by the prophet Abraham. I'll end on this final little tiny story.
where Abraham went to in the search for God, in the search for this true God, the God. He first looked at the sky, as many of us nowadays still do, you know, maybe through astronomy and telescopes or through intellect. And he saw the stars, and he said, maybe this is my God. But then the stars set, and he said, God is, how can God go away? God is unwavering. God is ever-present. Then he picked the moon, and the moon set. And then the next morning, he saw the sun, and he said, ah, maybe this is it. But of course, we all know that the sun sets, that it sets very beautifully. And when it set that night, Abraham came to the final decision that polytheism and dividing up power is actually not what logic leads you to, even if you observe it in nature. And so he decided that whatever had created all of these, the sun, the star, the moon, the universe, and this existence must be the true God. And this is how he came to the monotheistic belief of submission. And this is what Islam actually means, literally, is to submit to that one power.
Oh, great. Well, you know, I'm learning things. I'm taking notes. I'm on page 3 now. I understand that Jen is with us. I also understand from my latest bleep across my screen. Unfortunately, Jen, we've got about 6 minutes, and we're going to be right in the middle of this terrific, if anyone has the weather channel, they should pull it up on their on their iPhone or whatever, because it is a terrific storm that's coming. And so, Jen, are you there?
I am.
Yay, Jen's here. That was an act of God. Speaking of God,
it was.
It's you online. So I'm not going to step in for you. You are there, and I would assume you have a Christian take on some of this, which is not so far away from what they're talking.
It isn't. I would say it's not very far from the Judaism take on it, because as far as at least my take on it, from the Christian view, we come from a Judaism take as far as the patriarch. You know, we just believe that the Messiah has came as in the form of Jesus. So as far as Abraham is concerned, he is the patriarch, Abraham and, you know, Sarah, which I'm really glad that Rabbi brought up Sarah. And, you know, the line, Jesus' line, come from Abraham, and which is very fascinating to follow that whole line and how we were brought about and how he was brought about and how Jerusalem and Israel and everything is brought about in that. And I don't want to, you know, rehash everything that you guys have all just, you know, talked about. So
What's the most fascinating thing about Sarah, though? Neither Wasif or Rabbi have mentioned it.
Sarah, to me, she had that moment of doubt. You know, she was old, and well, she had multiple moments of doubt. You know, she had the handmaiden. Here's my handmaiden, and tried to have a child a different way.
That's right.
So Ishmael was born. And then, again, doubted that she would be with child in her old age, and even laughed when God said that she would have a child. That's and right.
One of the first miracles, per se in the Christian religion is this miracle that an 80, 90-year-old woman is going to give birth, who's been barren all her life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what else did you find?
States that it's easy for when God, when she asked God, Sarah asked God, you know, how am I going to have a child? Well, Abraham asked God, how am I going to have a child? Me and my husband are basically old, and God says to Abraham and Sarah that it is easy for me because I have created things out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that our time is limited, and I mean, one of the things that we get a focus of for Sarah, actually, there's a section of the Torah readings that we do, which is called The Life of Sarah, and it actually talks about Sarah's death. And, mm-hmm. You know, the rabbis look at the fact that Abraham takes Isaac up to the mountaintop, presumably to sacrifice him, which never takes place, right? There's a mm-hmm. Ram that sacrifices in his place. And immediately after that story, kind of Isaac goes off. And Abraham, look, seemed to have some issues with his children, if you will, right? Ishmael is sent off into the desert. He almost sacrifices Isaac. And immediately after the story of the near sacrifice of Isaac, that's when Sarah dies. And so in the rabbinic tradition, it says, well, why does Sarah die? It says because she got word that this is what Abraham was about to do. She was standing close to a ledge. She fainted, and she fell off, and she died. Right, so I don't want to make it like the highlights of Sarah's life was when she died, right? But nonetheless, we have that story. But I want to talk about another thing related to death, which is Abraham's death. And this is something that doesn't get a lot of focus on when we're talking about Bible stories or even when we're studying, you know, when we're studying Scripture. But if you look at Genesis chapter 25, verse 9, and you look at who's there at the time of Abraham's death. Abraham, Sarah dies before Abraham, so Abraham dies. Actually, in the lineage, it says that Abraham takes another wife. Her name is Keturah. It gives you a little bit more of his lineage. And then it says that Abraham dies. And who shows up at his funeral to bury him but Isaac, as you would expect, mm-hmm. and Ishmael is there also. And I don't want to say it if it's like it's an afterthought, because actually this is a remarkable verse in the Torah. Because it does not only Isaac was there, it says that Isaac and Ishmael were there. And those of us who take a look at the story of Isaac as being something that's very paramount, we say, yay! But those of us who take a look at the story of Ishmael as being paramount, we should also say, hey, right? And in addition to that, take a look at this and we say that this was a moment of incredible coming together and even reconciliation of two brothers, right? And if you want to, we could even extend that to our own time and say that that gives us an incredible, incredible model of the type of reconciliation, or even if you don't want to look at it as reconciliation, the type of brotherhood and sisterhood that should be there for Judaism, for Christianity, as well as for Islam. That, if I were to put like a banner on it, but I would say before the rain.
Unfortunately, we have to shut down, and we had a couple seconds left. I hope that you come back when the weather is nicer. And we can carry on this conversation because I'm learning a lot, even after 20 years. So I want to say good night.
All of you, peace from the Greensboro Muslimosphere. Yes.
And peace from the Jewish Community Temple Emmanuel and all of us here in Greensboro.
Yes, thank you so much. And I want to end with Jen. I'm sorry we couldn't pull you in sooner. And
That's okay. And
I didn't get to the interview with Kara at all, but we'll make up for that. And I got to shut down. So good night. God bless. And know that God is with you.
Lord God, we come before you, asking you to lay your hands on us, asking you to cleanse us, Lord Jesus, with your hands, asking you to bless us with your hands. We need you in our life. We praise your name. Come on, Ashley.
His hands are filled with power.